And without further ado, we will introduce our first speaker, who is David C. from Manhattan, New York.
Good day. My name is David, and I am an alcoholic. Robin, thank you. And I want to thank each and every one of you for being here today. I must say that I have to had to pray earlier a couple times, and one of them was just to be honest, because I'm a liar, I'm a cheat, and I'm a thief, and I just want to put that out there at the very beginning. And I'm also a drug addict and an alcoholic, so knowing that, you know that I really am. Yes, I also want to thank the town of San Antonio for allowing us to have a wonderful time. I know I am, right? Okay, so let's get started, right? I also want to thank the committee. I don't know why I'm up here. I was joking with somebody yesterday, like, do they know me? It's like spirituality, meditation, I mean, really. So anyway, it has been there. It really has been in a strange way a constant in my whole life. You know, when I was born, I wasn't born quite right, and I didn't know what that was about. I was different. I felt different, and it was such a relief when I got into these rooms of AA that I realized that I'm really not that different, that I'm like many of you, and that we share a lot of things. We have a lot of things in common, and that's such a relief, so that I don't have to live in that pain and that agony anymore. I am going to apologize in right now if I do start to well up or something. I am so full of emotion and feelings, and I was at the Toronto one 5 years ago, and I remember it. I'm a feel good junkie, and it's just my skin is just crawling from you guys, you know, and not in a bad way, not like, you know, because when I was drinking and drugging, my skin used to really crawl, you know, and I also have to thank God for that wonderful hurricane that came through that cooled off San Antonio. You guys have not, yeah, right? It would have been really thick up in here, and it's such a relief that we're able to walk around and enjoy, you know, or wheel around as some of our friends get to do. And I'm so glad that we have that availability today, that you guys can come and be here too. All right. Like I said before, I wasn't born quite right. I'm from a family that drinks heavily, and a long history of heavy drinking. Alcoholism is very thick through all the fiber of my being, my family. And I am so glad that I'm able today to have the chance and the opportunity to break that cycle within my family. And that's only because of you guys. Like I said, I'm humbled by all this. So I wasn't right. Alcohol, when I finally had my first sip, was such a relief. It took everything away. I was brought up in a home where I was made to go to church every Sunday. I went to a parochial school for part of my development. So, you know, I know all about religion. You know, we studied it, right? As a typical alcoholic, I know everything I need to know. I just have to remember to remove myself so that I can listen to it, right? So, that's my history growing up. The alcohol worked at the beginning. It was just what I needed. It took away all the pain, all the emotion, all the misfits. I all of a sudden was, you know, what I needed to be, which was slick and smooth and able to navigate through my life. You know, alcohol gave me the roadmap to get here. But to get through my life, which was really miserable, you know, and it became more and more, increasingly more miserable. I say this at alcohol from a very young age made my decisions for me. You know, it formed who I became. You know, I gave my life and my will and my power over to alcohol and drugs at a very young age. And I'm one of the very fortunate ones that I kind of continued to fall uphill. You know, I became very good at lying, cheating, stealing. Getting over was a big thing that I did with you guys, or with the world. I got over on the world. Because my low self-esteem, which was really low, became so inflated with alcohol. You know, and I became entitled, and I became privileged. You know, and I made sure that you knew that constantly. So, wow, you know, I was afraid this might happen. I might go blank. You know, I did not do notes, but I did write myself just a little prayer. So, prayer and meditation. At a young age, I started praying very early to get myself out of here, you know, so to get myself over this, you know. I would pray that they would not arrest me, You know, I have to say that my higher power walked with me for a very long and tumultuous ride. I found myself in a lot of situations that a young man like myself at that period should not have been in. You know, and that's only due to the drugs and alcohol. It really just lowered my moral fiber. You know, and I thought during that period that I was becoming spiritual. You know, I got on this journey of spirituality while I was using to try and, right? But really, they coincide so well. It's like when I was in analysis and using it really helped a lot, you know. Right? Who wants to be honest with your therapist? So you just continue in analysis, you know. So, and so, as you know, it didn't work. None of it worked. But in my mind, I kept trying to figure out what could work, what religion could work for me, what kind of thing. And I would try and sit, you know. Yeah, smoke some crack and sit and try and meditate. And I also have to say that drugs and alcohol, I saw God continuously. And I really believed that. You know, I really believed that. While I was on LSD, I was in communion with my God. And I'm sorry if I'm speaking about drugs and I offend anybody. I am an alcoholic. I love booze. I started with a drink and I finished with a drink and I did a lot in between. You know, because I had to stay continuously at this state of numbness. Because I found if I was numb, I was with my higher power. I really thought I was. I was being taken care of. And in a really kind of strange, sick way, my higher power did. I'm a blackout drinker. I don't like to just have a sip of wine. Like, I want the bottle. You know, I want to start off fancy and I'll end up with whatever, literally. And the goal was just to get to that point, to oblivion, where nothingness, you know. And if I could just stay there, you know, I just wanted to stay there. So thank God it stopped working, but I continued anyway. And it really stopped working, and I continued even more. And finally, somebody recommended that I go away, and I did. And the beauty of that is not the treatment center, not any of that. The real beauty was that when I was sitting there, when I heard a voice outside of myself. I went into this treatment center, and I saw this double rainbow, and I literally heard a voice outside of myself that said, "It will be okay." And I'm here to tell you on my sobriety day, oh God, I forgot all those things, right? I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I have a home group, actually a couple in New York City. One of them is the Breakfast Club, which is 7:30 in the morning because I wake up not right. You know, I said that earlier that I was born not right. So I got to get there, you know, I got to get there quick, you know. And of course, my resentment is that they're not at 7. My old home group was at 7. You know, I'm twisted already by 7:30. So, I'm one of all of those things, all of the above, and I have a home group, I have a sponsor, I've worked the steps. Yeah, that was a beautiful, beautiful journey, going through the steps, and I feel that I live in the steps today, you know, and I get up every morning and I do 1, 2, and 3, and the most important thing that I start off with is the we, you know, not me, we, and that is something that I have to continuously work on, you know, because I can do this. I don't need you guys. I don't like you guys. I don't like people at all. And I'm in a service industry, you know? So my higher power has a great sense of humor. He keeps me laughing all the time, you know? And also there again, if I say the word God or he, my God has no sexuality at all. And I refer to God just out of an easy phrase that most people can understand. When I first came into these rooms, it was just a group of drunks, you guys. Actually, it was the chair I was sitting in. Somebody said, "Get something and hold on." And so I just held on to where I was sitting. And slowly it has just morphed and grown. And that's the beautiful journey of not being on drugs and alcohol today and being present in my life, is that if I ask for help, and then I sit with what I've asked for, and I allow the help to come, when I allow the help to come. Now, when I try to make the help, and when I try to do it, when my ego is in there, it doesn't work because I'm easing God out. When I just sit with it, which is the hardest thing because, I mean, I want it done now. So when I just sit, it happens. And then my form of action is that I have to accept what happens, and I have to move forward. And that's another thing I don't want to do. So anyway, prayer and meditation, yes. So my drugs usage, blah, 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 in rehab, and I'm sitting there. I hear this voice outside of myself, and it has been okay every day since that day, which was April 8, 2002. which is a really long time between drinks. And then I know there's a lot of people with some long-term sobriety. It's really not that long between drinks, because I know that that drink is just this far away. It's a hand's distance away. You know, I'm also very fortunate that I have been relieved of that desire to drink, that desire to drink. And that's only because I did ask. I was praying at the end. My life was really miserable, and I was praying constantly. I would go to the doctor, and I would try to find out what was wrong with me, you know? And I knew I was an alcoholic. I wasn't one of those people that came in here like, oh, gee, wow, I'm an alcoholic. You know, who knew? I knew. I did not realize. I was the person that drove other people to rehabs. I didn't realize that I had a choice, you know, that I had that choice. The choice was for you and for other people. You know, and that gets back to the low self-esteem with the high ego, you know. And that's all about not being in connection with a higher power. So anyway, I got this wonderful journey. I got this my first sponsor was this straight man that was really like just straight as an arrow. You know, he was a superintendent of a building and just hardcore drinker and, you know, all this other stuff. And he didn't want to hear my grandiosity or my bullshit at all. You know, he brought it all the way back to the very basic thing, which: how does this deal with my alcoholism? What am I going to do about it? And how am I going to take this to my higher power? So I slowly had to, like, listen. You know, I didn't have to. And I didn't actually at first. I was very willful. You know, I would say, you know, it's not an option. Drinking again is not an option. I understand today it is. You know, like I said, I've been relieved of that desire. But it doesn't mean that I don't think about it from time to time. A situation comes up, arises, and all of a sudden I'm looking at a steamy martini. I'm staying at this hotel, and they're all sitting across the bar in these beautiful martini glasses. I mean, I just came from a meeting. I'm at a convention, and I'm looking at these martini glasses like, well, they're not very big. And they're probably charging them a lot, because it's gotten expensive in the past 8 years to drink. Thank God. And caloric intake, too. Let's just talk about that one, right? So let's really get into it. So prayer and meditation, how do I do that on a daily basis? Well, I'd like to say that I get up every morning and get on my knees. Okay, I can say that. Like I told you before, I'm a liar. Okay, so I did go through a really wonderful period where everything was working great, where I had pulled out my back. And you know what I said? God does for me what I can't do for myself. And I was having a real hard time praying in the mornings. So I pulled out my back, and the first thing that I had to do, I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't step out of bed. I had to crawl out of bed. Well, interesting, when I crawled out of bed, I was on my knees. You know, and this was with a little bit of sobriety, so I would like just bend over my bed, and I thought, well, as long as I'm here, you know. You know. So, and you know, one of the brilliant things that I heard a long time ago was when another friend of mine was having some help, this woman told him, she said, honey, what I want you to do every morning is when you get up and you look at that beautiful face in the mirror, because you are beautiful. God has created you. You may not like the way you look, but you are beautiful. I want you to look in that mirror and take that bar of soap and write on that mirror, help. And that's a prayer, help. And for me, I love acronyms. And help to me is His ever loving presence. You know? And just leave that on. Just leave it there and go with the day. Right? When you come home, you can wipe it off. Because if you don't do it more than just first thing in the morning, and then when you get home and wipe that off, you've at least thought of it twice in that day. And during that period, when you wipe off that mirror, maybe you'll reflect on your day. You know? So these are gentle little things that I've been taught that helped me. One was getting on my knees. You know, like I said, which I could wish was every day. And most of the days that I do it, it's so amazing. You know what I'm saying, right? It's so amazing. My day gets so much better. The other thing, for me, meditation, I was having a hard time in the morning at my morning group, right? So I'm having this hard time. There's personalities, you know. One of my dear, dear friends reminded me, one of the people was just like getting to me, and she said, well, honey, she's just an irritant. You know, and once I put that label on that person, and I don't believe in labeling people, I was able to look at that person in a different light. And then I began to pray. I mean, what's that about? Pray for somebody else? You know, it says right here in the text that we are supposed to pray for others and not for ourselves, you know. So when I started praying for her, the most wonderful thing happened, and I realized she was just an irritant. She stopped irritating me, you know, and she was just there now. And she's actually a kind, loving person that has her own issues. And a lot of what I don't like about her issues, as I don't like a lot of you, is what I don't like about myself. And it's just that simple. Because I've realized you are all God's creation and you're all children of God. And as long as I remember that, there's no way that I cannot love each and every single one of you. So, now in my morning group, like I said, I was having some problems. And I love it. This is with every meeting though, not just my morning group. Because it's all about me and where I'm at in my head. I was told to, which I did in early sobriety is the wildest thing, is watch the lips as people speak. If you're having problems concentrating, one, turn off the phone, you know, put it away, take it. And I've gotten in bad myself. Somebody texts me in my pocket, so now I set it away somewhere else, you know. And if I'm having problems, just watch the speaker. Watch their lips move. And the most interesting thing happened to me when I started doing that. I started concentrating on what they were saying. And it's amazing to me because I hear God's message every day through what? Through other people. So if I'm really listening to what they're saying, I'm hearing my message that I need to hear. I may not get it until a week later or a month later or a year later. Sometimes many years later, it pops in my brain like, oh my God, that's what she was saying? You know. So that's another tool that I've used for my prayer meditation. When I talk about this too, for me, it's meditating because you know, I can sit with the timer. I've done this, but I've done all these different things. I was thinking about this last night when I went for a walk. How do I really meditate today? So that's another one. When they're reading How It Works or the preamble, I listen to the words. I repeat the words in my brain. And all that does is it quiets the thought for me. So I'm not thinking about the money. I'm not thinking about the job. I'm not thinking about that resentment. I'm not thinking about anything but the words. And those words wash over me and heal me on a daily basis. The other ways that I meditate for myself is in dance. I love to dance. You know, I had the wonderful experience the other night. I think it was Thursday night here. They had some little jam thing going on. And of course, I don't want to go. I want to go to bed. I got to go to bed. I'm tired. And a friend of mine got me to go. And all of a sudden, I was transfixed and I was in another world. Because I wasn't thinking about anything but that music going through my mind and my body, which was wonderful, a wonderful experience. Another thing for myself to help me meditate last night, beautiful, those speakers last night, they were gorgeous, right? What about those flags? I mean, I was just taken away at the amount, Afghanistan, I mean, right? It blew me away. Who even knew? And I mean, there's alcoholics everywhere, so of course, but we have a solution. We have a program that can help each and every single one of us that is sick and suffering. So being there, I started just praying, you know, and I went out last night and I went to a party and some of this, and I was done, but I wasn't tired. So I walked to Austin. I mean, wait, we're in San Antonio. Texas. I went to high school in Texas, actually. So I started walking. You know, I was determined to go somewhere. I started walking east on Commerce, you know, and I just kept going. And I walked out of town, the main part of town. Actually, at one point, this guy said, what are you looking for? And I said, I'm just going, you know, and I kept going. And for me, because I live in a city where I'm able to walk a lot and I'm able to walk, that is part of my meditation because I'm concentrating on my step, my form, my posture, my back. And I'm not thinking about, there again, the money, the sex, the people, the resentment, all that stuff. I'm just thinking about nothing. And I'm open to hear what my higher power has to say to me. And I walked. I walked all the way on out into an area that was not good, you know, past a highway. And I know, I'm from this place. And when the gentleman said to me, sir, do you want to talk? I said, no. Because he was, and the women walking around, and I'm not going to tell you what they were selling. But I kept going past all of that. And then I heard my higher power. I was past the fear. I got the fear, everything that I wanted, and it said, you are okay, go home. But I didn't turn around and go back. I walked around the corner because I didn't want to see those people anymore. And I did. And that's a method that I use today for meditation because it clears. Because I cannot hear what my higher power is trying to tell me, even when my mind is clear. But I have a much better chance of doing it when my mind is clear. So it got me back and it got me home. And I was able then to lie in bed and reflect my day and what I had done wrong and what I have to do the next day. You know, and I got up this morning and I did get on my knees. And I just asked in a simple prayer that I could do what my higher power needs for me to do today, that I could help someone else. And as I said at the very beginning, remember, for me, that sick and suffering alcoholic can just be me. So I want to thank you guys for listening. I hope you got something out of it. and enjoy the rest of your conference. Like I said, my name is David, and I am an alcoholic.
Our next speaker is Linda W. Now, Linda W. is originally from Annapolis, Maryland. She has spent the last 10 years in Nelson, New Zealand, and she's in the process of moving back to Annapolis, Maryland. This is Linda W.
Hi, everybody. I am Linda, and I'm an alcoholic and a very, very grateful alcoholic. And I've never spoken to this many people before. And David, I want to thank you, because the humor and the oneness and the love that I feel in this room right now is just amazing. My sobriety date is March 17th, 1986. And my home group, my main home group, is the Eye Opener Group, 7:30 a.m. in Annapolis, Maryland. And then I have a secondary home group in Nelson, New Zealand, which is 8 a.m. on Saturday mornings, and it's called the Dawnbreaker Group. And also I've had a sponsor of 22 years that passed away 2 years ago, and that's a really important part of where I am in my story right now. Let's see what else about qualifying. I've done all the steps, and interestingly, I'll just say this: I did my fourth and fifth step with my grand sponsor, and when I got this invitation to speak, and like David, I have no idea how I got asked or how I'm here, other than I really do believe it's my sponsor working. But my grand sponsor's voice has been with me ever since, and she had a phrase that she used a lot, and it was, "Isn't it grand?" And it just really has been going through me since March. I also went in total denial and did no preparation up until just before coming here. And there was a gentleman yesterday. I really listened closely yesterday to all the speakers and was just in awe of people's ability to get up here and share so clearly. But one man said, he had been rehearsing since March, and so he didn't know what story he was going to tell. And actually, that was my old way. That's where how it would have been in the beginning. But I will say, this last 2 years, the whole foundation and bottom dropped out of my life, and it's nothing short of miraculous. I'm in a whole other phase of my recovery, and I'm just in awe. And I know, as a result of that, that's why I'm standing in front of you. I did everything my sponsor asked me to do except for one thing. And I'll tell a little story how that one thing shows up. I go to a lot of conferences, and my professional life and my recovery dovetailed. And I'll get into that a little bit, but, God, of my understanding, got me into this program the only way I would have found it, and that was through my academic training. And I was going to a lot of conferences, and I was really blessed that they were on addiction and spirituality. And I came back, and I would come back all filled with this stuff. And my sponsor also was in the same profession I was in. So, we would digest all of this and take it through the program. And I came back one time, and I was just really bored. Nobody was saying anything new, and I had better ideas. And she listened to all this, as she did. And she finally said, Linda, you know what that's about, don't you? And I said, no. And she said, it's time for you to be up there. And I never brought it up again. because I'm terrified, actually, of speaking in front of people. And I think what I'd like to do, let me just go back and qualify a little bit. I came into the world a secret. And, of course, growing up, I didn't know that, but it was in my psyche. It was in my being. And I had a really unusual split between spirituality and drinking. My father, originally from New York City, was at the U.S. Naval Academy when I was born. And even today, there's very strict rules about dating and that type of thing. So he was married and had a child before he graduated. So I, if I would have been found out, that would have been his whole career. So that's kind of in my psyche and my makeup. On the other side of it, my mother was living in Baltimore above the Arcadian Bar and Grill, which her parents owned. So I've got, you know, one hand, you know, the strict structured military, and on the other hand, you know, this bar and grill. And my mother, you know, bless her heart, she died last June of this disease and basically went mad from it. And that's a whole other story, which I won't get into today. So after my dad graduated from the academy, he went into the Air Force. And interesting, this program never ceases to amaze me. Harold, who spoke last night, is from Annapolis. And I've heard him many, many, many times. And I never knew the story about, you know, the pushing the button and the missiles. And that was my dad's job. He was a missile launch officer and a Navigator B-52s. And I'll fast forward all of this other than to say, on the military bases, we had base priests. And I was raised Catholic also. And I loved Catholic ritual and the high mass and all of, there was something really calming to me about that. But the other part of it is the priest would come over for dinner and he would leave drunk on whiskey sours. You know, so. And I learned really early, honestly, as early as second and third grade, I was, you know, questioning the divine. And, you know, I was in Catholic school and the nuns were teaching us things and it just didn't make sense. And you had Adam and Eve on one hand and you had the cavemen and the dinosaurs on the other. And I couldn't figure out how it worked. And when I asked, I knew that they didn't know either, you know, and so, yeah, very quickly, you know, I had this sense, I had this presence, I just had this knowingness about me, which actually saved me and my alcoholism, but on the other hand, I didn't get life, you know, I was terrified of life, and a big part of, you know, being military and Catholic, it was all this look good and, you know, grades and it was just a false self. I guess that's the shortest way to say it. I was what people wanted me to be. I wasn't who I was. Alcohol was very much a part of growing up. I mean, we have movie films. Of course, you know, it was whiskey being rubbed on my gums as a child. You know, one movie, you know, I'm drinking out of the baby bottle, and the next I'm literally chugging out of a beer can. So obviously I had, you know, had the taste of beer on my lips way before that. And, you know, I think I probably would have gone on for quite a while with the drinking if it hadn't been for the Vietnam War. You know, my father was trained to go to war. And he went to Nam and came back and was a broken man. And, you know, there was some speculation there about LSD. And, you know, that's, again, a whole other story. I'll stay with my addiction. But after several suicide attempts, he took his life. And, you know, I was 13 at the time. And life as I knew it ended. You know, for the first 10 years, I don't know, it was a pretty good foundation. I don't think I would have really gone off the rails. But at 13, my mother's answer to my father's death was to drink herself into insanity, which he did. And, you know, we were pretty much left on our own. And we were taught to drink. Also, from the age of 13 to 20, we didn't talk about what had happened in the family. The first time I talked to my brothers about it, you know, was at a bar over a beer. You know, that was how we bonded in my family. And by the age of 19, I knew I didn't want to drink anymore. I had the desire not to drink at the age of 19. And I knew I was medicating. I had a lot going on inside. You know, I was suffering from terminal intensity when I got here. And honestly, you know, I mean, it took me 4 years, you know, of... I'm tight. And I loved the humor in the rooms. I loved the honesty. You know, being raised the way I was, feelings were, there was something wrong with you if you showed your feelings. And these rooms taught me that that was okay. So anyway, from 19, I did my first geographic around 21, came out to Colorado. Actually, we lived in Texas, too. We've lived all over the country being in the Air Force. We lived down in Harlingen, Texas. And I love to travel, but my first geographic was to Colorado. And I went out there to study nutrition. I wasn't going to drink. I was going to quit smoking cigarettes. Because I had this concept of how life was supposed to be, but then I had the reality of how it was, and I just couldn't quite get the two together. I went out to Colorado and studying nutrition justified that marijuana was a natural herb. So... And, you know, the denial of this disease, honestly, I was 6 months sober, and I was still telling people I didn't drink the whole time I was in Colorado, and that is so not true. I had major binges when I was out there. Most of my drinking from 19 to 30 was binge drinking. And one of my controls for drinking was school. You know, I'd get into school and throw myself into academia. And then I'd have 3 months off in the summer, and I'd bartend, and I'd be on a three-month binge. And I can remember one semester I went back into university, and my electives, I'll never forget this, I was doing Tai Chi and ballet. And this was after a very heavy, heavy summer of partying. I thought I was going to die. With God, talk about detox. And actually, exercise was one of the ways that I managed this illness. I would, you know, go out on a Friday night and get totally plastered and be up the next day in the gym, you know, on the treadmill, on high, running it off. This was my life. Talk about extremes. You know, I just, the polarities were just unbelievable. So anyway, you know, from 19 to 30, you know, I just kind of managed the best I could a lot of binge drinking. But throughout all of this, I always had prayer and meditation. I always had a God of my understanding. I always knew there was more, very similar to what David said. I wanted to get out of here. You know, this life was just, it was painful. And there were some people that seemed to know how to do it, but my world was just full of people that drank. I didn't know people that didn't, or the ones that didn't were pretty boring. And, you know, I really didn't want that. So I found this program, you know, the only way that I could have found it. I mean, it is truly miraculous and by the grace of God. As I mentioned, I studied nutrition, and I came back to Maryland, and I was teaching nutrition. I was counseling. And one of my clients said to me that I was teaching her about food, what her son was learning in rehab. And I planted a seed. This was about 3 years earlier. And then I was working on my master's program, and it was in counseling and with a health concentration. And literally part of my program, I was asked to go to 6 12-step meetings. And I thought I had died and gone to heaven. You know, I just couldn't believe that people were talking about their feelings, because even in a counseling program, people weren't talking about their feelings. It was all in the head. You know, it was all theory. And it became very painful for me because, once again, I was on the outside looking in. You know, I was there as a student. I was there to observe. And I so wanted what I saw. And, you know, part of my defects, I didn't know how to ask for help. You know, I didn't know how to say, I want what you have. And by the grace of God, I had to do an internship. And I arranged my own internship. I did it. I asked to do it in a drug and alcohol rehab. And I'll never forget this woman, Roz Redman, big black woman from the streets of Baltimore City. And she took me on a tour of the facility, and she sat me down in her office. And she looked at me and asked me if I was an ACOA. And I didn't know what that was, an adult child of an alcoholic. And honest to God, I felt like I was naked, you know, because my whole life I'd been trying to cover that up. And she took me on as an intern. So basically I got a 28-day rehab, you know, as an intern. Great gift. And there were 3 things in that rehab that allowed me to come into the program. The first was the third tradition, that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I'd had that. The second was when I was studying nutrition. I was on all kinds of mega doses of vitamins because I was studying orthomolecular medicine, and the Canadian Medical Association was using large quantities of vitamins to deal with addicts. And the backs of my legs always itched, and I knew that it was some kind of nutritional deficiency. And I did figure out it was B vitamins. And but when I was sitting in this rehab, one of the doctors talked about one of the withdrawal symptoms was itching. And I realized, you know, that I was withdrawing. And then the third thing that I didn't know was only alcoholics have blackouts. You know, I thought everybody that drank had blackouts. So, you know, that was a gift. And then the other piece of that was there was a women's AA meeting that was brought into that rehab. And, again, I sat and I listened, and I was in pain because I wanted to be a part of. And this is where I'll get emotional because it's just by the grace of God. But I started first going to ACOA meetings, and, you know, it's funny because I've been in the program 24 years. It's taken me 21 years to be able to go into an Al-Anon meeting and feel comfortable. In ACOA, I just wasn't ready. You know, I just, Thank God I drank. You know, it blew out a lot of the pain that it took me, you know, a long time to face in this program. And I was very blessed to have a sponsor who didn't separate out the different programs. I worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been able to deal with everything in this program. She taught me that the fourth step opens it up to every psychological therapy on the planet, and the 11th step opens us up to every spiritual philosophy that there is. And I was a seeker. I was one of those in my teens. I'd be drinking at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd be in the corner, you know, with a group of friends trying to figure out the meaning of life. That's how I enjoyed drinking. You know, all of the, you know, hoo-la. And, I mean, I could do all of that, you know, the party girl thing, but I wanted answers, you know. I wanted oblivion, and I wanted answers. And the program has given me that beyond my wildest dreams. It's just, how are we doing? I guess I'll just fast forward. I was very, very blessed, you know, when I came into these rooms. I was about 4 years sober, and I'm an academic. I love study. I love to learn. And what this program has taught me is to get into my heart and to feel. And my default button is to get into my head. And what I love about these rooms is it brings me up back into my heart. But I was about 4 years sober, and I was at a conference in Washington, D.C., and it was the last day, the last session. And a woman, I don't know, Christina Groff, I don't know if any of you know her, but she's, I probably shouldn't say her name, but she's written a lot about alcoholism. And she brought a friend of hers up on the stage, and he got up, and he was in recovery, and he said, any of you ever felt, is this all there is? And that's where I was in my recovery. And he opened me up to a whole other world of recovery. And I've done a lot of work in altered states of consciousness because that's what I was drinking for. But I do it consciously now. And for me, the 11th step is making conscious contact. With my parents, I mean, I've had to come face the fact that both of them were mentally ill. I mean, you don't take your life unless you're insane. And my mother definitely died insane. And that was my biggest fear, was going crazy. And I think that's kept me sober. You know, I really, but the opportunity that I've also had is to really explore the possibilities of who we are as human beings and why we're here and our spiritual life. And for that, I'm really, really blessed and very grateful. The program has helped me keep things simple. You know, I'm not simple. I'm pretty complex. And it's taken a long time for me to, you know, be comfortable with myself and to be comfortable with other people. And I'm really grateful. But anyway, 2 years, well, I'll share this too. When my father died, I really loved my father. And one of the mistaken beliefs that I had was that I could not survive the loss of a loved one. And I've done a lot of work with that. I've had a lot of analysis too. And, you know, I was the type in analysis that it was Jungian analysis, and, you know, I would ask my analyst, you know, I don't want to know about Carl Jung's theory. I want to know how he accessed what he accessed, you know. You know, I wanted a direct link to the divine, and my analyst just kind of looked at me like I was nuts. And I would talk to him about, you know, recovery. And I said, you know, he didn't really get recovery. And I said, have you ever been desperate? And again, he just looked at me. And so that was where my sponsor came in. You know, she was able to link all this up for me. Where was I going with that? I just lost my train of thought. The mistaken belief I had was that I wouldn't survive the loss of a loved one. And my sponsor even gave me that gift. I mean, the miracles in this program. She died 7 years ago. I mean, I got the call in New Zealand that she was sent home in hospice care. And I spun off the planet. You know, I was in a foreign country. People really didn't know about my drinking. They didn't know about my recovery. I mean, I had a few people that knew about my recovery, but not the extent of what I've had to go through to be sane. And I, you know, through the grace of this program and what I had learned, you know, I held it together. And I got the call, and in her wisdom, she had been put into hospice care, and she had 10 days of no memory. But in that time, she said to her hospice nurses, if I'm dying, why do I have to be on drugs? And they took her off the drugs, and that's what had taken her to death's door. So we got another 5 years together, which
was nothing short of miraculous. And I teased her about being Jesus and coming back from the dead. But we got to explore a lot during that time. So when she died 2 years ago, it was a normal, healthy grief process. And I'm very grateful for that. She healed that original wound. Because when my father died tragically, we didn't talk about it. Nobody talked. And that was a great gift. And then a year later, I got an email from my brother. And, you know, one of the things that this program has not given me in my biological family, it's a family illness, and my family was blown apart by it. And in the early days when I heard, you know, that people came here and felt like this was family, I didn't want to hear that. I didn't want another family. But today, you are my family. Beyond a shadow of a doubt, this is my family. And I was sitting in the meeting yesterday in that big hall, and Harold was up there. You know, Harold's from my hometown. And I thought, how miraculous is this? You know, I'm sober, I'm sane, and I'm serene. You know, I'm someone that my mind went 1,000 miles an hour. And my mind actually can be calm and still today. I meditate an hour a day. That's unheard of. One of the things my sponsor had said, I was probably about 3 or 4 years sober, and she looked at me and she said, maybe it's time we start looking at how you're using exercise to self-medicate. And I looked at her and said, don't even touch it, you know. I had to run. You know that Forrest Gump movie? Boy, did I relate to that. I was a runner. I couldn't sit still. I have a brother, you know, 3 hours a day in the gym. That's the psychic energy from addiction that we had to overcome. It's nothing short of a miracle that I can sit and meditate and have a calm mind for an hour a day. And I attribute that to Alcoholics Anonymous and the love of my sponsor and every single one of you. It's truly miraculous. But anyway, I got the call about my mom, and that, you know, that's a whole other story. But basically, you know, she had taken legal action that she had no next of kin and had requested that none of us be there. But my brothers and I, being who we are, we were all there. I'd chosen not to go first, but then I decided to go. And again, I saw, you know, this family illness. My brothers and I, we went through the motions. We did the appropriate thing. We were guests at her funeral. You know, the doctors wouldn't talk to us. You know, a stranger made the decisions. But, you know, on her deathbed, I got there 6 hours before she died, and she told me she was sorry. And, you know, that in some ways, I mean, it was a great gift, but in other ways, I was kind of pissed off because she knew what she was doing. But, you know, I really felt free for the first time. And I'm over. I need to bring closure here. But anyway, long story short, the last 2 years, last year in particular, God's totally in charge of my life. I did the third step like I've never done the third step. My life is totally surrendered to God, and that's the only reason I'm up here talking in front of all you. Because it just terrifies me. But miracles do happen. You know, in the beginning I heard, don't give up until the miracle happens. Every single one of us are miracles. And again, I'm just grateful to be sober, sane, and serene. Thank you.
Speaker is our third speaker is Jim S. from Wisconsin.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jim Schober, and I am an alcoholic. As I was sitting up here before the meeting started, I was looking out at all of you. And I mentioned to Linda, I said, you know, I'm looking at all of these faces, and I don't know all of you. I just know that you all want to be here because you're one of this fellowship, whatever fellowship it is, Al-Anon, AA, or whatever. And I said, there's a bunch of miracles sitting out here today. We're all God's miracles in Alcoholics Anonymous, and for that I am so grateful, because I'm one of those miracles also, and I'm a miracle to be standing before you today. What a privilege and an honor that I have to be able to share my story, my thoughts on prayer and meditation. My sobriety date is May the 13th of 1979. Thank you. I have a sponsor today who I am accountable to, so much to the fact that if I'm not going to be attending a meeting that I regularly attend on a regular basis, I do the best that I can to my ability today to call him and say, I'm not going to be in attendance at that meeting, and this is why. Because for me, I need that. I need that today. Several years back, in my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, I lost sight of the God that was in my life. And I lost sight of what you people had to offer for me as a recovering alcoholic. I didn't turn my back necessarily on the spiritual principles, but my ego turned my back on going to meetings that I thought weren't good enough for me. My life had turned upside down at that time, and I was put on a second shift job rather than working a day job, and I couldn't get to the home group that I was attending regularly, and I couldn't get to the meetings that I was going to, and I was going to have to go to day meetings, and my attitude was, they're just not as good. They're just not as good. And so slowly but surely, and you've all heard this, I began to back away from what I had been taught. I began to back away from taking the actions that were necessary to maintain that type of sobriety that I want today, which is emotional sobriety, which is a relationship with a God that I have in my life today that no one can take away from me. I'm sober today by the grace of God and no other reason. I stand before you by the grace of God and no other reason. I should also share that growing up, I don't know if my father was an alcoholic, and I'm not going to stand up here and say that he was, because that was his deal. But I can tell you that when I look back at it honestly, and when I try to focus on what my family life was really like, and not what I want my perception to be of what it was like, I can tell you that my father drank, and drank very heavily. And when he drank, he changed. And our home was not happy. There was a lot of emotional abuse, and there was a lot of violence in our home. So I grew up with that, and I did not like confrontation at all. Not one bit. But my mother was a very religious person. God bless her. She's 93 years old and still doing great. She's funny as a hoot. We got together for Mother's Day with the rest of my brothers and sisters, and we just had a great time. I mention this because she had us, almost forced us to go to church every Sunday. She had us going to prayer service on Wednesday evenings, and she had me be involved in the youth group in the church at that time. And I really thought that this is what spirituality, what a belief in God was all about. I mean, the church that I grew up in and went to up until the time my father passed away, we were asked to memorize Bible verses. We were asked to do all of these different works, attend Bible studies, so on and so forth. And I just thought this was great, because this alcoholic standing up here this morning did not like himself, even from a little kid. I think Dave mentioned that he never felt like he fit in, and that was me. I never felt like I fit anywhere. I didn't think I was smart enough. I didn't think I was good-looking enough. I didn't think I had any talents or any skills. So where do I go? What do I do? The thing that I missed growing up in that church that my mother had and still has to this day is that deep faith that God will take care of us, that God will take care of her if she just asks him. I never got that. I missed that part somewhere. I don't know where. And I should really back up here a minute. I have a lot of members from my home group that are in this session at this time, and they're my rock. If I didn't have that home group to go to every Thursday night, we meet on Thursday nights in Brookfield, Wisconsin, St. John Vianney Church, 8 o'clock. We also have a newcomers meeting, which starts at 6:30. It's an hour long. And then we have our regular meeting at 8 o'clock. So if you're ever in the area of Wisconsin, Brookfield, come and join us. We'd love to have you. But they're my rock. I watch their examples, and I watch how they walk through things with dignity and grace. And that's how I want to live my life today, even after so many years of sobriety. I don't have all the answers. I never claimed to have the answers. You people have the answers, and God has the answers, and that's how I get what I need. So, as I said, I grew up in an alcoholic home. And when I was short of 11 years old, my father passed away. Now, my father and I had a very good relationship. And perhaps maybe that's why I am the way I am today. I don't know. And it's not important. But I loved that man more than I loved life at that time. I was only short of 11 years old. And he died unexpectedly. And I didn't know what to do. And my aunts and my uncles recall that for weeks I did nothing but sit around and cry. And they couldn't get me to stop crying. My dad's younger brother even went so far as to have me come and live with them for about 2 or 3 months so that maybe they could help the situation. But I didn't know it at the time, but today I know that I made a conscious or a subconscious decision that God did this to me, that there had to be something wrong with Jim, that God took the only person that I was that close to and that I loved away from me, and I was never going to get that close to another human being again, and I was never going to have God. I did that without even thinking about it, and I proceeded to live my life without a God. I proceeded to live life on Jim's terms rather than on God's terms. And it took me places and it had me take actions that I was totally foreign to, but I did them anyway because I thought that's what I had to do. I found Alcoholics Anonymous the first time 6 months prior to my sobriety date, only because my wife suggested that possibly I might be an alcoholic, and that maybe I should go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that she had a lady friend that had a husband who was already in Alcoholics Anonymous, that if I wanted to go to the meeting, he would meet me there. And I said, okay, I'll go. But you see, God was already starting to work in my life at that moment because there was somebody there that was going to meet me at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my life was going to change. And it was going to change forever. I went to that meeting, didn't have an open mind. What I said to myself was, those people are like my dad, but I'm not like them. I don't do those things. I'm not hiding my drinking or making excuses. But I was lying to myself. And I was a good liar to you people also, those that I was associated with when I was younger. And even today it can cause me problems in my life if I don't keep it in check. So I walked out of that meeting and I drank for another 6 months or so. But when I said something changed, I had to hide my drinking, or so I thought, from my wife. I had to make excuses as to why I was coming home late at night or early in the morning. I would say, well, I was too tired to drive home from work, so I stopped at my mom's and I slept there and I'm home now. Well, I know today she never bought that, but at the time I thought she did, and it sounded good. But in my head, I couldn't understand why I was doing that. What's wrong with me? I never made excuses for my drinking. I just drank, got drunk, came home, sobered up, and went back to work again, and did it all over the same night. And so 6 months to the day, it was the day before Mother's Day in 1979, and I really believe in the power of prayer because my mother shared with me years later, she said, you know, we prayed for you for a long time, that you would find something that would stop you from drinking. And she said, it's kind of a neat miracle that you sobered up on Mother's Day of 1979. That was God again working in my life. I came back to you people, I sat in that meeting, and I said, my name is Jim and I'm an alcoholic, and it scared me to death. It didn't scare me to be an alcoholic. It scared me to think that you people didn't drink anymore, and how was I going to not drink? I had never stopped. Oh, I had made promises that I would not drink for a week or two or whatever. I had experimented when I'm going to only stop for one or two, and I would end up being drunk anyway after a week or so. But I never stopped completely, and I was scared to death that I couldn't do this. I just couldn't do it. And a little old guy in the corner came up to me, and he said, "You don't have to do it forever. You just have to do it for today. We're with you today, and here's a phone number. Call us if you have trouble in the night, and we'll help you." And that began my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since that time. Has my life always been wonderful? Have I always been in prayer and meditation since I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous? No. This is 2010. In 2002, I went through one of the deepest, darkest, dry drunks and untreated alcoholism that I have ever been in my life. I said my work schedule changed, things changed. I walked out of the house on my wife without even talking to her about it. She had no clue. She had lost her father 2 years prior to that, and we had been doing just fine. And all of a sudden, I'm gone. And I lived a life that was not conducive to being very spiritual. Because in the 12 and 12, if I can find it, I had it marked. It talks about we need that nourishment from God to continue to improve our spirituality. That's what the 11th step is all about. I'm not anywhere near perfect at prayer and meditation, but what I strive to do is stay away from that situation that came into my life in 2002 because I stopped doing what I was doing before that worked because I thought I'd be okay. God was nowhere in the picture. Jim was in the picture. There was no meditation about this. I just did it. Self will run wild. Or riot, however it's said. And I had been sober over 20 years. So let no one think that because we're sober for any amount of time in Alcoholics Anonymous that there's a guarantee that we won't go into that place called untreated alcoholism because it can happen to us without even knowing it. And when we're there, it's a very dark, lonely place. Hopefully, by the grace of God, I will never have to go back there again. I made a commitment after that, when I came back to the meetings and my life went back to some kind of normalcy, that I needed a different type of sponsorship. I had a very good sponsor at the time, don't get me wrong, but by my choice, I was not using the man. I was not using him to the fullness and abilities that he had to offer me. And I wish I could stand up here and say that I was proud of the way I changed sponsors, but I can't. I'd be lying if I did, and I told you I can lie even today, and I don't want to do that anymore. I had spoke to the gentleman who was my sponsor today, and I had kind of toyed back and forth about, you know, maybe I would like to have you sponsor me, but I'm not sure, and we talked. And I knew what he was going to tell me. In a nutshell, he would say, you need to go back to your sponsor and try to work things out. Well, there was not any real working out because I hadn't talked to the man in months and I hadn't shared my life with him and I hadn't shared what was going on. So how could he help me? He couldn't. And all of a sudden, he came back into town and I was going to celebrate my birthday. And I believe God was working again. He had to be. Otherwise, how would the two of them found out? My sponsor called me and said, just like this, and I don't swear from the podium, but I will say, he said, "What the hell's going on, Jim?" And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I understand you've got a new sponsor and you're supposed to take your cake tomorrow. What's going on?" I was held accountable again. God wanted me to come clean with what was really going on. And I shared it with him, and he said, "You know, He said, I hold nothing against you and I love you dearly, but I think you need someone else to be your sponsor and I'm letting you go. I'm releasing you with love. And that's what God would have done. God held me in his hand through that 6 or 8 month period of time where I couldn't do what I was supposed to be doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And God does that for us today if we ask. And sometimes even if we don't ask, he does that. He's there. His power is there. It's in this room. I can feel it. And so I began a new journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. I asked the sponsor I have today if he would be my sponsor, and he accepted that job. And that was a tough job at the time because there were a lot of issues that needed to be worked through and a lot of things that needed to be talked about. But one of the things I asked God to help me with at that moment in my life was, if I'm going to ask this man to sponsor me, I'm going to be totally committed to this man for everything that happens in my life, no matter how big or how small it is, I'm going to talk to him about it. And I really, truly believe I can honestly stand here today and tell you that there's nothing that happens in my life today that I don't share with that man or ask his suggestions about, because he knows more than what I know. He's worked through these problems and these situations, and if he hasn't, he knows people that have. And that's the way our home group works. We don't claim as sponsors to have all the answers. One of the nicest things, or two nice things before I close, in the 11th step is the first one is the 11th step prayer. And let me read it for you, because it's beautiful, and I believe it with all my heart and soul. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to understood, than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. And it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. And that's exactly what happened to me in the process that I went through in the last 8 years, is I had to die in those areas of my life so I could become new and reborn and live again. And one of the quick things I wanted to share, when I was a young kid, I always wanted to be a minister for some reason. I drank that opportunity away. It just wasn't in the cards. But today, God's given me another chance, because I'm able to work with other alcoholics and to share my experience, strength, and hope with them, and to show how one alcoholic loving another alcoholic can bring that sparkle back to their eyes and that goodness back into their life so they can have the gift that all of us have been given. And one last thing I want to read out of the 12 and 12. Perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. We know that God lovingly watches over us. We know that when we turn to Him, all will be well with us, here and hereafter. And all I have to do to get that is step aside and let God help me. Thank you.